Hi, my name is Alexa, and you're listening to the MedCurity Podcast. With me today, I have Matt Holcomb with Biltmore Insurance Services. Matt has extensive experience in working with clients on cybersecurity insurance issues, which is exactly why I brought him on the show. Today, we'll specifically be talking about phishing scams and how they can lead to identity theft and all sorts of different issues. First off, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, Matt. It's really great to have you on.
Thank you, Alexa. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And just to give a little bit of background about phishing scams, I've been doing a lot of research on it lately, and I found that since last year, ransomware attacks have actually gone up, and phishing scams happen to be the lead cause of those ransomware attacks. In fact, 75% of businesses have experienced successful phishing attacks, which just means that they have experienced a phishing attack that actually led to downloaded malware or perhaps ransomware. Whatever the case, it was a successful attack. On top of that, in my research, I also found that the healthcare and pharmaceutical companies are among the top three most at-risk organizations for phishing attacks. And that's where I really wanted to focus your experience, Matt, and expertise on this issue today, since it's obviously a really big problem. So to begin, can you just give us a basic definition of phishing and why cyber criminals so often use this method?
Sure. Basically, as the name sounds, it's what they do is they just cast out a bunch of different emails to, you know, a broad spectrum of people and try to see who's going to catch. A lot of times, you know, it could be something of, hey, I'm a family member is stuck someplace. How are something? I need money. Can you help me with this? Just click on this link and we can get your information. You can help me with getting out of this situation. Or it could be, hey, it's your bank. We're contacting you because of we received some information on you. We need to make sure your account's correct. Can you please click on this and log in? Once you do that, then you have things that are embedded and planted into your computer, malware, ransomware, all this different stuff. And that's where it takes hold. And then you have these problems. So yeah, as you mentioned, they have gone through the roof in the last year. One thing with COVID, people are working from home more, working remote. Mm-hmm. Now that gives more opportunities for these hackers who are doing the same thing they've always been doing, but now they have a broader spectrum to go after. Because a lot of times when people work from home, they may not have the same security levels that they do in their office. So it's a problem. People are finding that you need to make sure if you have employees working at home, the situation of this, you want to definitely make sure that their security is up to date and is going to be the same levels of you have in your office. Hospitals may not have that situation because they still have to go in, but you may have someone who goes home and does some work period after hours and same situation can happen. But yeah, it's gone through the roof.
Yeah, I think with hospitals, it's a similar situation, but it's a little bit reversed. So with hospitals, they have the BYOD policy, which is, you know, bring your own device. So instead of employees going home and working from home, it's employees going to work with their own devices that might not have the same security measures as devices that are already in office. And that's been around for a while, but it's becoming more and more predominant in the workforce because a lot of people like to use their own devices. It's more convenient and there's less cost involved with the organization. Unless, of course, there's a breach and then there's more cost involved. But the reasoning behind it, it's a very similar thing as employees working from home. It's basically the same concept, just a little bit different. So I just wanted to give our listeners a little bit more of a, just a bit of an overview of phishing. And obviously, you kind of touched on it, but cyber criminals basically use this method because it's so easy to manipulate people into opening emails that kind of hit an emotional trigger, like you said, from your bank, you know, maybe stating that a payment was declined or something like that. Like it's, and over the years, phishing emails have become more legitimate looking. It's harder to discern which ones are valid or invalid. It used to be pretty easy to spot the spammy ones, but now it's become more sophisticated. It's a little bit harder to tell which ones are real or not.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And what they sometimes do is it could be, let's say, my email address. Let's say mattholcomb@xyz.com. Let's just say that's my email address. Well, someone takes that email. The end of my name has a B on it. Instead of a B, they put a D, making an H-O-L-C-O-M-D. People don't recognize that D and they you know, hover over it. They just see Matt Holcomb at XYZ company. Oh, it must be for Matt. What does he need? And they click on that link. And boom, they're automatically taken over. One of the things with my office, we send out fraudulent emails through our own tech support IT guys just to see who's going to be vulnerable and click on something. And I've had it a couple times when I first started, I would get an email. I was like, oh, I need to check this out. And it's on my phone. I'd hit open. And the next thing I know, I get another email 5 minutes later. Hey, you've been flagged because you looked at a fraudulent email, whatever, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you have to go take a test. So that's one of the biggest things is they're using almost identical emails to trick people. And it's very common. And it's, you're right, pulling on the heartstrings. If you have someone, I'm hurt or I'm stuck here, you know, especially if you have someone that does a lot of traveling internationally, you know, a person could get something. Hey, it's John. I'm over here in Europe and I'm stuck with no money. Can you help me? I need this, that, and the other. They're finding new ways to get in to people who are, may not really recognize it. And it's a scary thing.
Yeah. And also credentials are a little bit easier to steal nowadays because there's so much information on the internet. I mean, you can find people's email addresses. There are ways. It's not even illegal to find somebody's email address. You know, you can just scrape data off the internet. You can find it and use it. And then you can twist it and utilize that to scam people. The next question really was, how do criminals trick people into opening phishing scams? So we kind of talked about that, you know, but now I want to talk about what are the practical ways that people can avoid these kinds of scams? What can people do to protect themselves or prevent themselves from opening it? What are some good tips that people can follow?
Well, if it's from a personal friend or someone you know, you may want to circle back with them if you can. You can also sometimes highlight the email address to look at it because a lot of people don't do that. It could just say Matt Holcomb and it could look exactly like my email address. But if you look at it with a fine tooth comb, you might see, okay, no, that's not an email I recognize. Let me call them or let me email them separately. Or if you want, while the email is sitting there, you could pull up another one and completely email them separately as well, just to ask them, hey, did you send me something in regards to XYZ? Mm-hmm. Now, from a standpoint of your bank, or another big one is the IRS, or anything like that, your bank and the IRS and all these, they're not going to send you an email. They're either going to send you a certified letter, and they're definitely not going to call you either. They'll send you notification. Like I said, if it's your bank, it could be something through your app. If you have your bank, it has an app on your phone. They'll send something through there. But the last thing they're going to do, especially the IRS, they're not going to call you. They're not going to email you. If they want you, they'll usually send a certified letter to you, let you know this is what you need to do. That's a big area that people are getting scammed on a lot.
Yeah, especially right now with the unemployment checks and stimulus checks. I know there's been a lot of fraudulent activity around that and people not knowing where to get the correct information because, first of all, people are really stressed. So people are stressed about not making payments and not having enough money during this difficult time. And so they're really willing to do anything or act too quickly when trying to gather information about, you know, those kinds of sources like with the unemployment office. So I know that there's been a lot of fraudulent activity around that, but watch out for those manipulation tactics.
Yeah. And another thing is us as the person who gets trapped, we're not doing everything we can to block this stuff. The hackers and all these guys that are doing this, guys, whoever they are, these people, this is what they do 24/7. They sit and they try to find ways to get into your information. So they're doing their due diligence to do this. And, you know, this is not our job. We can't sit all day and just see who's coming at me, who's coming at me. That's the scary thing is a lot of times people don't pick up on these things. And the next thing you know, they've got malware, all this stuff hits them. And it's like, whoa, what's this? So it's a scary thing.
Yeah. So you just mentioned that obviously we don't have the time to sit and sort through all these emails all day long. So what are some other tips that people can follow to protect phishing emails from ever coming into their inbox at all?
Well, on a personal side, yeah, you can get all kinds of software to put on your computer that will stop these things. Microsoft has stuff that for their emails that they can do, you know, authentications, different things, and it'll send certain stuff that if it flags it, you can as spam, they'll immediately send it away so you'll never see it. But as far as a company goes, and they should have typically an IT person, someone who's sitting there working on all this. And that's it. That is their job. Their job is to make sure that these things don't come through, finding new ways, updates, because as you update your system on your computer, the hackers and all these, they're doing the same thing. They're like a couple steps ahead of everybody. So a lot of times that's how they get in, is because someone who slips up or just doesn't do an update or just says, my computer's fine. I still use AOL and everything's wonderful. I mean, not to knock AOL, but I'm just saying, you know, that's what I'm saying. Some people live in that world of, I've got something that came from 1995 for software programming and of security. So I think I'm fine. Well, that's not the case. You've got to update it constantly.
Yeah. And if you are allowing employees to use their own personal devices, it is your responsibility to make sure that their devices are up to date and standard with the devices that you use in office. So you need to make sure that your employees are utilizing good spam blockers and different programs that can ensure that they're of the same quality as the devices that you have in office, which that's a really difficult thing to navigate. So how do you recommend IT directors or office managers or whatever individuals in charge of BYOD policies, what do you recommend that they do to ensure that their employees are utilizing good programs to make sure that all information is being kept safe? Like, how can they go about that?
Well, I mean, they could supply the phones to each employee, and that way it would be the company phone. And then just similar with some companies where we can't go to certain websites on a company computer. You can kind of do that with a company phone when you have certain stuff that's being blocked. Or if you have them bring their own phone in, then you have to allow someone to update and put in security measures to make sure that phone's not going to be something that's going to be hacked. Because that is a situation with me. Like I said, I'm on the road and sales rep. I've looked at my phone a couple of times on emails and saw something that came through. It looks like it kind of came from the office. I click on it. Nope, it's not from the office at all. So now what my office has done is if it's an internal email, at the very top, it will not say anything. But if it's an external email, it will say, this is an external email. Please be careful. So once you see that and it looks like it came from the office, that's a good trigger sign to say, oh, this is not something I should be touching, because it says it came from Biltmore. But when I look at it, it says it's an external email, which it should not have that stamp on it. So that's a good way for companies to be able to keep track and make sure that people aren't hacking in, trying to use a company email address to get someone to trick them into doing something.
Yeah. And it also really boils down to having good policies and procedures around BYOD, around usage of company email, different things like that. So having that laid out within your security risk assessment is incredibly important for hospitals, you know, and those in the healthcare field, to make sure that they already have a full set of policies and procedures surrounding emails, and then making sure once you have those set of policies and procedures that you're actually following and implementing it. And then also, I wanted to talk about another type of phishing scam that's not as prevalent at all, but it is still out there. About 96% of phishing scams are delivered by email, but 1% are delivered by phone, which is referred to as vishing. And even though this is a really small percentage, I want our listeners to be aware of it and understand the dangers behind it. Because a lot of times, if something isn't as prevalent or it's not as significant, it's not addressed at all. And I just don't think that that should be the case in this situation, because it's still something that healthcare workers can face. So I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of insight on what vishing is, how it works, and maybe even give us a real life example.
Yes, of course. I talked about this the other day. AI, artificial intelligence, is now mimicking speech pattern from different, like the CEO of a company. And what it's doing is it's calling up and talking to, say, the secretary and saying, hey, we've got to get this money wired to this account immediately, because else we're going to lose this deal. So the person starts going in and starts actually getting ready to do the setup for the wire transfer. And then all of a sudden, within like 30 minutes, they get a call again. And it's the same exact person, AI, with the same exact script that they just gave 30 minutes earlier. So that's what tipped them off that, oh no, this is not real. This is fake. This is someone basically pretending, mimicking our CEO to get this money over to him. Because the thing is you have a short window to get that money back if you do the wire. It's usually about 48 to 72 hours, because after that, if it goes overseas, you'll never get it back. And believe it or not, the best person to call or the best department is the Secret Service.
Oh, they actually
not the FBI. The Secret Service actually has a division now that handles these cyber crimes. It's over $25,000. You call them, what they can do is they can get in touch with your bank immediately and get to the right person and get that wire transferred stopped. But it has to be within, like I said, 48 to 72 hours, or else the money's gone. I sat and listened to here in Atlanta about last year, a little over last year, a Secret Service agent came and spoke to a cyber networking group. And he discussed that, how you contact us, we'll get it taken care of. Otherwise, the money's gone and you'll never get it back.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously, you know, it would be worst case scenario to have that happen, but having that knowledge that you can actually reach out to a government entity and have that situation resolved or worked on, that's a really good thing to know. And especially, obviously, that means that this is a big enough issue for them to create a division just to deal with it. And something I read about yesterday was actually, I think a lot of times they're called chat bots. These robots, they really do sound very realistic. They can sound very convincing. And again, this is how technology has advanced throughout the years. These cyber crimes have become so advanced, and a lot of times you really cannot tell the difference unless you start maybe having a further conversation with this AI bot. And then you start realizing, oh, this is not a real person. But again, what happened with this kind of a scenario? These bots use positions of authority to get people to act quickly because that's the thing that they're trying to do. So again, manipulation, watch out for that. And it's coming from this position of authority, which makes you, obviously you're trying to do what your CEO or your boss is saying. You want to fulfill that request as soon as possible. But in any situation when they're asking for money, it might sound silly that somebody would actually fulfill that request when dealing with funds right away. But I think that when anyone is under stress, you do a lot of crazy things when you're under stress, especially when it comes from a supervisor or someone who has a position of authority over you. You're trained to kind of not ask questions. You're trained to just do. So in this scenario, we encourage you to ask questions and to pause and never, ever just fulfill that request right away or go into that stress action mode. Take a moment, pause, maybe ask further questions or stop the conversation completely, verify with someone else. Obviously, these are things that right now you might think, oh yes, of course I would do that. But in the moment, again, you're under stress, you're under pressure. You don't necessarily think of these things. But if you were ever to run into this kind of scenario, I hope that hearing this podcast would bring some of these thoughts to your memory and then you could remember to pause for a moment.
Yes. Yeah. And like I say, you know, it could be a doctor contacting his office, her office, hospital, and saying, hey, I need these medical records for XYZ patients because I'm getting ready to use for whatever, you know, and then that person on the other line who works for the hospital, works for the doctor's office, you know, not knowing that this is not really a doctor, and then sends out these medical records. Because on the black market, you know, your social security number is worth a couple dollars. It's not, it's people always get upset. I don't want my social security number getting out. And it's like, yeah, that's not really that big of a deal these days.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I found that out, I was a little sad.
Yeah. But when it comes to medical records, you're talking hundreds of dollars and they can recreate a person from scratch and they can get anything they want from that point. So
yeah. And that is the scariest thing. Medical records really are the highest quality form of identity theft that a criminal can get their hands on, which means that it's the thing that we need to protect the most because you literally can create an entire person off of medical records. And it's pretty much impossible to ever go back from that. And it's really, really sad to say, but I've done research on this and I've read different articles where individuals were in the unfortunate circumstance of having their medical records stolen. And then there were criminals that took their identity and did all sorts of things under their name. And there was no way that they could get that identity back. And it's really scary to think, which just means that there has to be a lot of precautions. So if you have that mindset of thinking medical records are literally worth, even in your head, just think thousands. Think of it as being as important as that person itself. If you think of the medical records as the person themselves, the patient that you are thinking of in that situation, then you'll be a lot less likely to just hand over that information. There has to be a lot of verification processes for handing that information over because it's highly valuable.
Right. Yes, definitely. And I think, you know, if we go back with considering hospitals and doctor's office, if you go back, you know, talking about ransomware, that's probably one of the most dangerous things because if a person can get into your system and have full control of it and then say, hey, we've got control of your whole entire system, all of your medical records, everything you have, we have the encryption keys and we're going to give them to you on the understanding that you will pay us X amount of dollars. And some people are like, well, no, it's not a big deal. We don't care about that. This is not really happening. But then all of a sudden, everything goes either blank or everything is taken from those files on medical records. And all of a sudden they realize, oh, no, this is really happening. In that situation, it's sad. But those guys, the cyber criminals, are probably going to get their money one way or the other. You pay, you know, to get it back and goes away, or they take the medical records and they make money off of that. So ransomware is really, really disturbing and very scary.
Yeah. And just like with the situation with the AI bots in Vishing, and if somehow those AI bots get you to give over information or wire money, where you can go to social services, the same thing with ransomware, you can go to the FBI. If you ever have a situation where that kind of thing happens and you're trapped in a circumstance where they hold the encryption keys, you don't have access to your patient data or anything in your system, immediately contact the FBI with that kind of situation. They can walk you through all the different steps. And the biggest problem that I'm seeing today is that, sad to say, you just can't prevent everything from happening to your organization. You can put really good security measures in place, but we've seen some really high up organizations be under attack through cybersecurity. There's just some really sophisticated tools that cyber criminals can use to penetrate pretty much any system. So instead of having the mindset of we're going to be a perfect organization with perfect cybersecurity, it's just kind of impossible to attain. And I don't want to make anybody sad out there or frustrated with that thought, but the mindset that you should have, in my opinion, is that you should have the thought that you need to put as many cybersecurity precautions in place as possible. The best your organization can personally get access to, put as many training programs in place to protect your employees from making human errors. And then if a mistake does happen, if you have successfully documented all of the precautionary measures that you took through a security risk assessment, then you have that as an insurance policy in and of itself, proving to government entities like the Office of Civil Rights that you took all these precautionary measures. And obviously there are a lot of really great preventative tools that you can take to prevent these kind of either scams or ransomware, but sometimes it is impossible to prevent everything perfectly. Nobody's perfect. No organization is perfect.
Yes. Real quick, also for your insurance policies, there are a lot of things you have to have in place before they'll insure you. So they will ask you, do you have, you know, different security measures in place to protect against XYZ that might happen? But once, if those do happen and you had those in place, then you have the insurance company that can be there for legal representation. Not only that, but also sending out notification to all of your clients, because you have a certain, you have a certain number of hours that you have to send out notification. Once you've known that there's been a hack or some kind of penetration in your network system, that you have to notify all of your clients. And if you do not, that's when it doesn't matter what you've documented, the government entities can come and find you and find you big.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just as important to know how to prevent attacks as it is how to deal with the aftermath of an attack. Both of those steps, they're both equally important, because just like Matt said, if you don't take the necessary steps after an attack happens, instead of getting caught up and frustrated in the fact that it happened, you need to move beyond that and continue in the necessary steps to continue with compliance of the after effects of whatever kind of breach or attack you experience, because there are protections that your organization will be under if you follow those necessary steps. If you don't, then those protections are removed. So it's just really important to remember that those steps are just as necessary as the preventative measures that you take. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for talking with me about, we kind of went all over the place with this, but it was really fun. We went from phishing to ransomware. It all connects. It kind of all comes back together in the end. But I just want to say thank you so much for giving us your expertise in these issues, walking us through these different scenarios that organizations might find themselves in, whether it's through phishing scams or vishing scams or ransomware attacks. Now that they might have a little bit of a better idea of exactly what to do if this kind of situation happens. So I just want to thank you so much again for taking the time to appear on our show today.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
To all our listeners out there, thank you so much for taking the time to tune in. If you're interested in taking care of all your HIPAA needs with a one-stop shop, then you've come to the right place. The MedCurity platform provides a powerful and intuitive approach to security risk analysis, policy management, and HIPAA training. Find us at MedCurity.com and mention you listen to our podcast for a special subscription discount.